Hi. Gay is not sin, and Jesus isn't asking the gay person to change and be straight. The Bible doesn't condemn gays. The 14 verses that are often used, or at least some of those 14 verses, do not talk about gays. The basics of the verses that often are used to condemn gays are talking about gang rape, are talking about fertility temple prostitutes, but they're not talking about regular gay people. You know who gay people are, don't you? Gay people are people that, you know, if you kind of look at yourself and you're straight and you've already lived life, or you know a little bit about life and you know about your parents and friends and so forth, you kind of have an idea about straights. You know, people are growing up, they get to a point they want to start dating the opposite sex, and they fall in love as they're dating, and then they set a date to get married and move in together. Now, there's lust involved in this process that two people of the opposite sex meet, fall in love, and get married. We call this heterosexuality. The reason that you fall in love with the opposite sex is because within inside you is built into the factor that you desire to be loved, and you desire to give love, and you desire the sexual part about it. And this is something that is important to you above almost anything else. I mean, almost one thing is for sure, is one of these days, if you're not married, you're going to be married. Or, see, you're already married. You know, doesn't matter anything about else about life. If you're not married, there's really not much important about life that you will say you don't want to get married because there's other stuff that's important to you. Now, some people will choose not to get married for lots of different reasons, because some things are pretty important to them. But usually if you don't get married, it's because you just didn't find anybody. And it might be your problem, but you still wishing to find somebody. We call this heterosexuality. The process of from being single to being married. And generally, everybody knows this process. Gays or straights, doesn't matter. It's been going on for many thousands of years. Now, if you understand heterosexuality, then you ought to be able to understand homosexuality. In our understanding of heterosexuality, we know there's problems. You got adultery. You got rape. You got all manner of things that's not nice. We have people that dominate the relationship in a horrible way. And we have all manner of people that are leading people that are just abusive, and so forth and so on. There is the side effects of heterosexuality. And generally speaking, we call that sexual immorality. But basically, heterosexuality is about love and about companionship and about being together. And this is what homosexuality is as well. There's problems, but the basics is the same as heterosexuality. Somebody wants to meet somebody and fall in love and live with them. Just like you as a heterosexual. So if you're going to find something that you want to say, God says gay is sin, then you need to find it as who gay is sin. And for gay to be sin, you got to find the actual, real, factual lives of gay people. You can't go and look for the particular things that we are really readily able to understand as sexual immorality, like rape, adultery, and the various abusive things. We like this term sex out of marriage, but we don't know what marriage is because we like to assume marriage is the way we think marriage is. But marriage is an evolving situation, and God doesn't appear to have a problem with the evolution of marriage. When we read the Bible, we're not finding God in any manner particularly condemning the steps of evolution in marriage. People, marriage is not what it was before. In Adam and Eve's day, marriage was very, very different than today. The qualifications were quite different. The rules were different. A brother could marry his sister and have babies. There wasn't anybody else. So for 1,000 years, this is perfectly fine, and there wasn't even a hint of complaint from God. After the flood, things began to change. Because now we had a set of people that were brothers, that were married. And so we have this kind of consideration of cousins, of their offspring. So now the concept of marrying cousins became the next stage in marriage. And you had to be pretty close cousin, like direct cousin, because there was nobody else. Remember, they all drowned. So all you got is three sons with their wives. And each one of them, they had babies. And so we have this thing of marrying straight out cousins. Time went on. We get on down a long line towards Moses, and we got some really strong distinctions because we went through the Abraham type of deal. So we started out with the 12 brothers, and each one of them became a tribe, and basically, you know, the wives were just, they weren't related to anything we would know as Israel or Hebrew or anything. So in plenty of ways, their wives were basically pagan. And so the only way that these pagans became Jewish folk, the Hebrew people, was to marry one of these 12 brothers. Now we got a stable. We got the beginning of you got to marry within a tribe. The problem is they start out with just a couple, one family. And so the tribe has to take time to develop. So it's a complex thing before we actually get into enough people that stringent laws of marrying within your tribe. By the time of Moses, you're supposed to marry in your tribe. Some cousins, and that's when the more distant cousin became the norm. You didn't marry necessarily direct cousins. Now, you didn't choose anything to do with marriages. You know, all these thousands of years go by, You ain't choosing who you're going to marry. You ain't going out on dates and walking down there and say, hey, I'd like you. Would you like to go out with me or something like that? You're not at a social gathering, you know, and Sunday school. And yeah, no, I'm going to sit next to this opposite sex here and kind of make eyes at her or him and see if there's a response back with them making eyes back. And so then maybe we can go have breakfast someplace. And then it begins a dating. No, this is not how it happened over there. Usually when you're born or something like that, the two different families are meeting, the heads of the households, and they're deciding, you know, to each one of them have the wherewithal to meet standards of the price of the bride, you know, to you make a deal, how much money are you going to give, how many cows, you know, and which way can we, and each one are wanting to fight for something, you know, hey, this family's a little richer, you know, if I'm marrying into it, you know, it's going to be beneficial to me. And the other one said, why should I invite this poor family to be part of my family by marrying into to? And so negotiations sometimes are quite extensive on who's going to marry who. Why, the people that are getting married have no choice in the matter. So this is the evolved for, and all of while there's concubines and so forth, and you get multiple wives. Then one problem, we don't read in the Bible, God has a problem with multiple wives. We just don't. We read that some people had hundreds of wives and hundreds of concubines. All the most important people of the Bible. I mean, sometimes there's a competition between wives, you know. You're having more babies than me, so I'm going to go and get a concubine so my husband can have catch up with babies. And then so the other one going to do the same. They go to the concubines, come on, go to bed with my husband, make more babies, so now we're making more babies than the other. You know, wives compete against wives of the same husband. Who's going to have the most babies, even if it means using slaves? So, you know, the phenomena of marriage is very different than what we have today. For the first 1,000 years of Christianity, marriage, again, was pretty strict, and it's pretty organized. You didn't particularly have choices of who you're going to marry. And the concept in Christianity actually was at an evolved state that literally taken in the Bible was, when you go to bed with your wife, you're supposed to be doing it to make a baby. If you go into bed with your wife for any other purpose, it's sin. It doesn't matter what you think today. What matters is, this is a fact of history in the first 1,000 years of Christianity. Catholics had a pretty strong say in this. You had St. Augustine. He had a concubine. And at a point of his life, he saw this woman that was really wealthy, and he wanted to marry her. But he had this concubine, and some of the circumstances, it wouldn't be too proper for him to have concubines and marry this well. So he sold the concubine. And Augustine went through a lot of problems. And he finally began writing about sexuality and all this kind of stuff, and made a lot of strict rules, which became part of the church, even spread a little bit into Protestants when as Protestants began to develop. And we have another change in the way marriage is. Now, it's not legal to have a concubine. And so then we get it to this place that lots of stuff happened. Catholic Church is always going through a few kind of really major segments of changing how we are. Doesn't matter we're Catholic or not, we got influenced from them. A lot of us didn't like it. We went out, developed the Protestant Church. And so all manner of stuff going on in this thing called marriage. And so then we come to the 12th century. Now, Catholics are pretty much in control of things now. It's a practically the law of the land. You got to be Catholic. Who cares about this? Making a personal decision for Jesus Christ because he came and died for your sin. It's just that, but now it's like any other religion. You better be it, or man, you're going to be not considered very highly. You might have a lot of problems in life. And so, pagans flocked to Christianity in huge numbers. When you have this kind of influx, you have another side effect. They're bringing their cultures into Christianity. We don't see a lot of God interference in showing his hatred of these kinds of things, you know, this fertility gods and all this kind of stuff. We know God doesn't like that, but for some reason or another, the church doesn't care about what God thinks, considering other gods, because this apparently was not such a big teaching to try to straighten out these newborn Christians, as it were, because they came in and they brought with them their fertility religious practices, where you had somebody, what today we can equivalent to a pastor. That would be the mediator between the two people getting married and the gods and goddesses. And so this priest here in fertility religions would be marrying two people, and they would have different kinds of rituals. Today we call them receptions. And anyway, so, and the thing is, you could pretty much customarily meet who you want. Doesn't matter what your parents think. If you want somebody, you see, marriage and stuff was about falling in love with somebody in pagan cultures. And so this became a normal situation in Christendom pretty quickly after all of these pagans came into it. And the names that pagans used for these kind of rituals were just changed over and given Christian names, so that, and then it didn't take very much longer after that before the concept of marriage from these pagans was thought to be originated in God in the Bible and Christianity. And so then we now have, from the 12th century onward, generally what we sort of know as the style of how you get married today. We pick and choose who we want to marry, and family had better keep out of it. I mean, sure, they have influences and everything like that, and some countries and some cultures are still making a pretty strong choice who you're going to marry. But generally speaking, this had an immense influence on the world's marriaging process. And that now, when you go to church, you can go make your goo-goo eyes at the person next to you, maybe go on a date, fall in love and get married. You know, you kind of sort of, well, we have a little bit of problems in these kind of things because families arrange it, so we don't know a lot about the other person because everybody's on their best behavior because everybody wants the same thing. They want to meet each other, have sex, and maybe get married and all that kind of stuff because this is what they like. Everybody wants to get married, live with somebody. And so we're on our best behavior, and it's not until after we're married when everybody lets their hair hang down and be who they really are, and we find out that maybe there's more problems than what we thought, and it wasn't such a good idea to marry this person. And well, we have 60% divorce rate that says that perhaps the style of getting married today is not very good because so many people get a divorce. And after all, divorce is supposed to be a pretty big sin. And we have a misconcept about divorce. We don't know what separation and divorce is. Moses gave a law that God didn't particularly like, but he accepted. You know, God accepts things man does sometimes. He doesn't particularly like it, and we would like to think that, you know, it's either right or wrong. But, you know, it just seems like that there's a lot of problems with our just direct right or wrong types of things sometimes about God. Sometimes things are right-ish, at least for some, and sometimes things are wrong-ish. There's even a verse that talks about some things are sin to some people, so you don't do it, but the same thing is not sin to other people, so don't be go condemning them. You know, there's even verse that deals with this in the New Testament. Now, marriage has changed. And so now you can actually choose who you want to be with. Things do evolve, but God created everybody. So we don't have this evolution of millions of years that scientists want to tell us and atheists want to tell us. But marriage does evolve. And there is a specific time when the church decided no gays. Gays is sin. But the thing is, the Bible doesn't say that. The Bible talks about sexual sin. It talks about heterosexual gang rape, regular rape, and so many kinds of sexual sins that heterosexuals do. Sometimes it seems kind of funny why some things are sexually sin, why multiple wives is not. So marriage and love is kind of a complex issue, but somehow or another we feel like we want it the way we think it should be, and we want to say that God said it. Well, God said many things. So when you're using or making statements about something, you pretty much need to present the Bible. And remember, people aren't dumb. If you present one verse, there's lots of other verses out there. You can't just say, here is a catch-all doctrine verse, when there's a million other verses out there that might be making that statement you're making about that verse a little bit complex. The Bible is spoken to the masses. And there are areas of the Bible that addresses certain things. There is generalities. If you try to make doctrine out of some verses, some of them you can. Others you can't really. I mean, for general life, you can. But generally speaking, you ought to consider the entire Bible. Be ready, because you're going to use a verse. Other people aren't as dumb as you think. They'll know more of the Bible. Because perhaps, in your case, you're condemning gays. And you're telling this to a gay person. Well, do you think a gay person is not going to know anything about the Bible? There's lots of gay people that knows a lot about the Bible, because they're getting condemned by people like you. And so they do a lot of the studying, so they know what the Bible says about things. It's a big book, you know. There's lots of stuff in the world you can learn about. And so, when you want to condemn somebody, you need to have some kind of backup. So if you're going to use a verse that talks about gang rape, all the people, all the boys, all the grandpas came to rape to death two angels. I mean, this is not gay behavior. Look in the Bible to find gay behavior. Where, again, as I was talking about, the marriage evolution of heterosexuality, somehow or another we don't think heterosexuality is sin, and so forth. But we know so much about it, we can really explain that what the sin parts about heterosexuality is. Rape, gang rape, adultery, and a whole bunch of different stuff. But heterosexuality isn't sin, it's about love and family. Blah, blah, blah. But then you need to know the same thing about homosexuality, that it's about love and family and all that kind of stuff. And yes, you can find some things that are rape. But usually, if you want to look at gang rapes and other rapes and everything like that, the Bible has so many more things about heterosexuality involving sexual immorality that the 14 or so verses that somehow got twisted around to try to make gay sin, because, you know, these people wanted to... Well, I notice I'm out of time, so I'm just going to stop here. If you don't know Jesus, turn to him right now and say, Jesus, I believe you're the Son of God. Forgive me of my sins and come into my life. Simple verse, get you saved. Now read the King James Bible. Ask Jesus to baptize you with the Holy Spirit. If you have a pain or a problem in your body, put your hand on that area. Now reach out for the screen. In the name of Jesus, be healed. See you next week.